the LSAT is definitely a test that I approached with a growth mindset. I think Doreen, you and I spoke about that a lot. It's a test that can be learned. Test taking, standardized test taking, is not an innate skill. Some people are naturally good at it. Good for them. That doesn't mean you can't learn it.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Before You Take the LSAT. My name is Doreen Benjamin, and today I'm very lucky to have one of my former students, Lisa, here to share her story. So we've actually done an interview in the past. First of all, hi, Lisa. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to get to chat again.
So yeah, we've had a conversation in the past. We did an Instagram Live about your path, and this was before you started at Columbia, but after you had gotten in. And today I want to delve deeper into your experience. Like, since you've gotten into law school, you're now, I think, about a year and a half in, right? So you're just at the, a little bit more than the halfway mark at this point. But I want to start out with your introduction by saying that you are so hardworking, but also humble, but also you come from a place of purpose, which I really love. And I feel like you don't see that so often. So it's one of the reasons I feel like I've connected with you so much and we've stayed in touch beyond just tutoring and being a student and having a somewhat more formal relationship. But beyond that, so going into some of the accomplishments, you speak Chinese and Spanish, and obviously English, so you're trilingual. You are currently 2L at Columbia Law. You are on the Columbia Law Review. You are a business owner. You started your own business during COVID called Your Wealth Legacy, and it's helping primarily women, right, with their finances. You were selected as a Fulbright to teach in Taiwan. You went to an incredibly selective college, Wellesley College, where you studied international relations and political science. You've published... Is it articles? Is that the correct?
Yes, articles and a book chapter.
Okay, incredible. Really, I could just keep going forever. Right now you're on a Veterans Right Clinic. You're on moot court. You were telling me that you're going to be in California to compete. You're also first generation, college, American. English is your second language. I'm really excited to have this conversation because I think the combination of who you are as a person, like values and characteristics wise, but also what you've been able to do is really unique. So let's get into this. I'd love to get started.
Let me just caveat that I will not be competing in California. Our wonderful 1Ls will be, but I will be going as their editor.
Coaching. You're going as a coach. Sorry, that's what I meant.
No worries.
And I still feel like I'm missing things from your introduction. But we'll get into some of it. I mean, and some of it has to do with what you're doing after law school, and we will get there. So let's start with, what do you think drives you? What is your why to do all of the things that you're doing?
My why is to leave this world a little better than I found it. And I don't know necessarily what that means in the long term, but just waking up every day and trying to work not just for myself, but for my community and society writ large. I think I've always had that purpose, and it's something that I try to remind myself of every day, even when it gets hard or tiring. But it definitely is not necessarily just driven by my own goals and my own interests, but for something larger than myself.
And I feel like I've seen that a lot with what you've shared with me and what we've talked about in the past. And I'm curious if you can kind of go, if you can share a little bit more what that looks like on a day-to-day or like more general level of what that looks like and how that drives you?
On a day-to-day basis, I honestly try to incorporate little things into my life, little moments of giving that maybe aren't so public-facing or something that people know about, but just small things that allow me to have a sense of purpose on a day-to-day basis that aren't necessarily a law degree or trying to serve my community in some other way. I definitely think that I'm somebody who needs a short-term purpose and a long-term purpose to keep me going. Sometimes getting a law degree seems very abstract. It's not like I'm doing things every single day with that skill set to help the world in any way. But that's why things like Your Wealth Legacy are so important to me, because I get to see that direct impact on a much shorter term scale than I will my law degree. And so I think in tandem, those two short and long term senses of purpose really help me keep working at the level that I've been working for a long time now.
I kind of want to go through this a little chronologically. We have spoken in the past about your experience with the LSAT and law school admissions, and I still want to cover that just for people who might not have heard that conversation. So let's just get started talking a little bit about the LSAT, which is how we ended up meeting. But maybe you can share a little bit about that briefly, kind of how you approached it, what you wish you might have known before you had started that process, and what it looked like for you.
The one thing I wish I would have known is, and I hope that everybody listening who has heard this piece of advice before actually acts on it, because until I started taking practice tests every single week, multiple times a week, I didn't really see a difference. And it wasn't until I actually started working with you during that I realized I needed to really start doing that. Sometimes you can do isolated logical reasoning sections and logic game sections, and you feel like you're getting ahead, but maybe you're spinning your wheels when it comes to seeing your scores. And I think just going through as many practice tests as you can, simulating test-like conditions, or maybe even in situations that are more uncomfortable than test-like conditions, like sitting in a coffee shop or something like that, can be really, really helpful. And I really wish I'd understood how serious people were when they told me to do that when I was starting my studying. You were a really big part of that. And I think also the LSAT is definitely a test that I approached with a growth mindset. I think Doreen, you and I spoke about that a lot. It's a test that can be learned. Test taking, standardized test taking, is not an innate skill. Some people are naturally good at it. Good for them. That doesn't mean you can't learn it. And for me, it was definitely something that I learned. And I learned a lot about myself and about the exam, because it did take me a little longer than I had anticipated.
I think another thing that we had talked about is, in terms of the mindset and the growth mindset specifically, is you had said that you had decided you wouldn't ever say that you disliked, you hated the LSAT or anything negative like that. It was more of a, I get to do this rather than I have to do this mentality.
Yeah, and I think that's a mentality I try to carry throughout life, but the LSAT really drilled it home for me. I think you need to go into the exam knowing why you're doing it. If you get so bogged down in the, I don't like spending my Saturdays taking practice tests, and you forget about, I'm doing this because I want to go to law school, then you can get into a kind of more negative mindset, which is not helpful for test day or for improving on the exam in general. And I also use this for law review now. I think a lot of people that with their first year on the law review, they're doing a lot of work that is tough. And for me, I've never once complained about it. I always tell myself, this is something I get to do. This is something I would have killed to do a year and a half ago, or to know that I would get to do. And so just reframing in that way can be incredibly helpful and just a powerful mindset shift.
Yeah. And I think sometimes when people hear like someone talking about mindset, they kind of are like, okay, but like, what do I need to know to study for the LSAT and like do well? It's so much more powerful than I think most people give credit or realize, or, and not, I feel like not so many people talk about it. So it might seem like, okay, well, if it was more important, more people would talk about it. But I really think that that could be a game changer for many people who might be struggling with whatever, wherever they are in their path with LSAT. One other thing I just want to talk to you about the LSAT before we move forward is, and we have talked about this in the past, but I think it's important enough to talk about again. You talked about how you balance work with studying. And I really want people to hear what a day in the life looked like for you when you were doing that, because the amount of dedication that you put into it and like discipline you had to put into it to do what you did, I think is really incredible. So can you share what were you doing at that time in terms of like the type of work you were doing? And then how were you fitting in the LSAT? Because you were working full time the whole time you were studying. You never took any break just to study for the LSAT.
No. And I was working as a paralegal in DC at that time, which the helpful part about my job was that it was very much 9 to 5, 6 at the latest. And so I knew that for me personally, it was very hard for me to come home from work and get as much studying in as I would have in the morning, but when my mind was still fresh, I wasn't distracted by the cases or by the attorneys I was working with, nothing. So I would get up at around 5:30, study until 7:30, commute to work, do my work day, and then come back and maybe do one or two practice sections or do some active recall or things like that weren't as intensive as what I was doing in the mornings. But I would be taking time sections and everything super early. It was pretty rough, but I think just building that routine and trying to maintain other healthy habits at the same time. I think when people hear 5 a.m., they think, oh, you're not sleeping. You're sleeping like 4 hours a night. And I am very much an early riser. It's very much a learned skill. Again, I don't think morning people are necessarily just born. Sometimes we make ourselves because of the circumstance. And that was definitely me. But I did always make sure that I was getting reasonable amounts of sleep, eating well, working out, doing all that good stuff to maintain an overall healthy lifestyle while I was working this hard.
Yeah. So you were studying for 2 hours before work, then you had an hour commute, you would get your work done, an hour of studying during your lunch break, then usually studying after work for another hour or two. So you would be getting, I mean, roughly 4 hours on a work day, and then you were also studying on the weekends. And I know you had mentioned in the past that originally you were studying Saturday and Sunday, and then ultimately you realized, like, when you took a break on Sunday, you actually did better, which I'm a huge proponent of the resting. I think it's really important to take that one day off. And I feel like a lot of people end up doing better because it allows you to process and refresh and rejuvenate by doing whatever it is that you like to do with your free time. So I just want people to know that it's possible, but it's really, really, really hard. Like, you really did, but you made it happen. Okay, so let's move into a little bit about the law school application process. How did you approach it? What was your mindset going in?
I did not love the way that I handled my undergrad application cycle. So I did the complete opposite for law school applications, and it worked so well. I started very early, so around January, February of the year that I was applying. And by starting, I mean I put together a spreadsheet. I looked up the schools that I wanted to go to. I would write down on that spreadsheet how many letters of recommendation each school asked for, the link to the application, how many pages of personal statement could be. All those little details that seem very overwhelming in the abstract, I wanted to have in one place. I could just go into it and do it. And that, to me, was a very low lift because it didn't require a whole lot of, like, actual thought, in the sense that, you know, a personal statement will require you to do a lot of drafting and editing. This was not that. This, to me, felt like busy work. And so I figured if I get that done in January, February, in March, I asked for letters of recommendation. I had my all letters of recommendation in by like April, May. And then I wrote my personal statement by like June, July, and then just spent time editing. And some people say submit your applications in September. There are a couple schools where you have a higher chance of getting in the earlier you submit. And so that had originally been my plan, but I ended up revising my personal statement longer. And I believe I had my applications in by the last week of October. So pretty early. I really didn't want it to feel stressed given everything else that I was doing. So I just really paced myself. And I found that that was really useful. I also didn't apply to that many schools. I think maybe I applied to like 11 or 12. That seemed pretty standard from the people I spoke to. But I know other people who applied to way more. So only apply to schools you would actually go to is what I would say.
Yeah, with leaving some room, because I've shared this before, but I didn't know that I would go to Columbia. I mean, I didn't really think that I would get in either. I wasn't really thinking, what are the chances? I was just like, okay, who knows? Let me just, because so much of the application is the same that it doesn't make that much of a difference often to apply. And I was within the range of like the regular amount of applying, but anyways, of like 10 schools or whatever. So I think one thing I'd want to talk to you about on this topic is just the law school application process and law school itself as it relates to finances, just given your background, having your wealth legacy. So I'm curious, you know, what you would say and what you would share in terms of what you think might be helpful to anyone who's pre-law and thinking about applying.
The first thing is you have to run your own race. When you're applying to law school, when you're in law school, different people are going to have different priorities, whether or not their backgrounds look similar or different to yours. And I think you have to be very mindful about what advice and what kind of feedback you're paying attention to, because only you know what you're comfortable with and where you want to be after law school financially, personally, professionally. So pay very close attention to that. I think it helps to kind of have a really clear sense of that, whether that means writing down your financial goals, what you want to, where you want to be after law school, just to give you a sense. For me, I wanted to get rid of my undergrad debt. That was so important to me before going into law school because I knew that I would be taking on a significant amount of debt. I personally have found that that was very helpful because I proved to myself that I could pay off a significant amount of debt. So I'm not stressed about the repayment process because I've already done it on a smaller scale, granted, but I think it built that confidence. But I will also say that sometimes it's very hard to understand what the financial cost of law school will be before you get your financial aid. And so for me, I looked up the cost of attendance for schools that I really wanted to go to. And then I spoke to students who went to those schools and asked them, Doreen, I think I asked you, how much do you spend on groceries a month? Where do you go? And you told me, and that helped me start building my budget way in advance. I think maybe a year in advance of actually going to law school. And that gave me a sense of how much I needed to have saved up. So for example, I wanted to make sure that I could live out of pocket and not take out loans for living expenses, at least for all 3 years of law school. So to do that, I knew I would have to work in big law every summer to cover the next year. And I've done that. And I think just knowing that that was a goal in advance was really, really helpful, because when it's in the abstract, that can seem like a very daunting proposition. How are you going to fund an entire year based off a summer? But then you do the research and you realize, okay, this is how much working in certain parts of the legal field pays versus others. And it allows you to kind of start shaping your career direction as well, if the financial aspect of it is the most important. For me, I'm definitely of the mindset of put on my oxygen mask first, so I can help other people next. And for me, a big part of that is making sure that I feel good with where I am in terms of my personal finances. And good is going to mean something different for everyone. So this is definitely not, this is what you should do. It's just what I did and what worked for me. And I think I would encourage everyone to do the same, because it really, at least for me, has been such a stress relief to not have to think about money in a very anxious or anxiety inducing way like I used to in undergrad.
That's incredible. I mean, I like the concept of, I mean, it makes so much sense. It's not necessarily easy to get those positions in big law during the summer, especially before, I think you did it before law school and then also as a 1L, is that right?
Yes. Big shout out to the SEO law program for that opportunity. Any incoming 1Ls, I believe the application, maybe the deadline has already passed, but it's usually around February, and you apply to this program that then matches you with a big law firm. Even if you're public interest, it's still interesting to kind of get a sense of how that world works, and you don't have to commit to coming back or anything like that, but it was a really great experience and kind of got my foot in the door before I even got to law school.
So let's talk a little bit about that. What was your experience like in big law before law school? And do you think that it helped you have an idea of what to expect? I mean, I hope it did.
It definitely did. I think also working as a paralegal was incredibly helpful, because I saw sort of the back end of the firm in terms of what does it look like to bring on new clients? What does it look like to do conflict checks? What does it look like when an attorney bills time? I think all of that is exposure I got as a paralegal, not necessarily as a summer associate, but both were equally instrumental in terms of the program itself, just meeting attorneys in the field, figuring out what you like, what you don't like, the differences between litigation work and transactional work. I had worked in asylum law and more public interest focused work before, so even just comparing the two experiences was really helpful. I was at a smaller DC firm before, then when I got to the big law firm, that was a much bigger or a larger firm, and they did very different work than my previous firm had done. So I think when you start getting more exposure to things, you start figuring out kind of what works for you and what doesn't. And I'm a big fan, even if you think you're not going to like it, just try everything. Try literally everything that you can or have the opportunity to try, because you never know. And you meet interesting people everywhere. Yeah. And I think that's equally valuable, to have people in your life who have different backgrounds and think in different ways and are engaged with different fields. That's also really important to me.
100% with you. I think that's how I've also kind of approached things, and I see the value and the benefit of it. And I think that's one of the things that you speak about a lot, is just giving things a chance to try things, explore. You never know how it's going to end up being important in your path. That, and I think also having a support system, are two things I feel like I hear you talk about quite a bit in terms of how it's important to you in your path.
100%. And I think the support system is so important for law school. And during, I'm sure you can speak to this as well. Law school is a very unique environment. And actually, I tell people to take a gap year all the time, and it sounds like financial advice or like resume padding advice, but actually, I think the biggest gift that taking gap years gives you is a very strong sense of self, because you've been out in the real world, you know how you interact in the real world, you know what it's like to work with other people, and you just learn things about yourself in that time that allow you to come into law school grounded. I do not think I would have had the same law school experience if I'd come in as a 22-year-old versus having taken 4 gap years. I'm much more comfortable with who I am, what I like, what I don't like. And I have a very strong support system of family and friends that remind me of what my values are and kind of call me back when it feels like the law school atmosphere is starting to like pull you in directions that maybe aren't authentic to you. And I think that's really important as well.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it might be helpful to hear a little bit about how you spent that time in your gap year. So you were in Taiwan for a full year of teaching, right, at one point, and you were working as a paralegal, like a lot of different experiences that I won't do it justice. So if you can share a little bit about what kinds of experiences you had before law school.
So I did a Fulbright in Taiwan right after graduation. That was such an incredible experience. I made 2 of my closest friends in the world when I was abroad, and they are still people that I call on to this day when I, you know, need some good perspective. And I think just by virtue of being abroad and being completely alone, I mean, I did not see anybody that I knew for a single year. And so that process was incredibly tough, but it also taught me so much about myself. And of course, I got to practice my language skills. All that was incredible. But I think just doing something that's a little bit out of your comfort zone or that maybe doesn't fit as linearly within your path is so helpful, because I think it not only gives you these very interesting life experiences, but it also makes you an interesting person to talk to.
Yeah.
For example, the reason that I think I got the job that I did after Taiwan, which was a nuclear security or a national security fellowship at a think tank working on nuclear security issues, was because I'd had this very fascinating experience of being in Taiwan and having a kind of firsthand view of what it looks like to run security drills in Taiwan and what it looks like to be in an environment where the national security landscape maybe looks a little bit different, and kind of thinking about that in a real world way. That was incredibly, I think, helpful not only to my personal but professional development. So I did a year at that think tank, learned a ton. That was more aligned with what I'd studied in undergrad, although I had more of a counterinsurgency focus when I was at Wellesley. I sort of pivoted into nuclear security, which I did not have a background in. And that taught me how to learn something really quickly on the job, something very dense, and how to be part of a team and how to kind of catch on quickly to support my peers. And that was a really fascinating experience. I met so many cool people. And again, another fellowship, which I thought was a long shot, but you just have to put yourself out there and you never know what works out. And then I did the 2 years as a paralegal, because at that point I had an inkling that I wanted to go to law school. And I figured, you know what, I want to go, but I want to be sure that, one, it's the right fit for me, and two, that I have a good sense of what it actually means to be a lawyer out in the world. So kind of getting away from the Elle Woods, Harvey Specter perspective of it all. I just wanted to see, okay, what is it actually like?
And it sounds like, just like the way you share your path, sometimes you're not sure if you're going to get something, but you still put yourself out there and you try. I feel like that's something I hear a lot in your path.
Yeah, I like other people to tell me no, but I'm not going to tell myself no.
I love it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your experience at Columbia Law. I know we've talked about it before, but seriously, I'm so proud of you. Like, really, you made your dream a reality, which is what we had talked about in the past. And now you're already more than halfway through, which is just insane. Can you share a little bit about what your expectations were coming into law school and what it was like, especially as a 1L, right? Because there's so much talk about 1L, like, you know, last time we were talking about the book 1L and how that like shapes, it gives a certain picture of what that experience might be like. What did you think you were going to experience, and what did you actually experience?
I don't actually think I came in with any preconceived notions about what 1L life would be like. A lot of people told me just how bad it was going to be, and that I was going to have no social life, and that everything was going to just be bad. This might be the most unpopular opinion. I'm going to explain why I feel this way, but I actually did not think 1L was that bad in terms of the workload. I definitely think that if you are somebody who is very disciplined and you kind of stay on track and you know how to organize your time, it's really not that bad. That being said, it was also the first time in my, well, yeah, I guess since college that I just focused on studying and I wasn't working multiple jobs. And during college, I was always working. And so I think that just made juggling things a lot harder. And to only focus on four classes my 1L fall was a nice change of pace. And I think part of that maybe was also because when I was taking those gap years, yes, I was working, but I always had like little projects going on in the background that filled up my weekends and time after work and things like that. I worked on a couple of political campaigns and, you know, there were a lot of things going on in the background and writing all these articles and things that was happening outside of work. And so law school just felt like it was a one focus thing. And that felt a lot more manageable to me. That being said, 2L is not the same experience. So,
well, basically, from what you just said, it sounds like you took the skills of being able to juggle and manage a lot of different things and having the discipline and the work ethic, and you were able to apply it then to law school. Like, you had already worked on that muscle, and now in law school, you can just fully use it to focus on one thing, which is amazing and makes sense. That's what made it a lot easier for you, maybe in some ways, not that it's easy, but made it easier for you. But I'm curious if you can share what like a day in the life looks like when you're at 1L.
Oh, that's a great question. I usually woke up pretty early. I had morning classes. So I think I had an 8:30 my first semester and a 9:10 my second. So I woke up very early. So between like 5:30 and 6:30 most days. And I would work out before class because I knew that after class, it probably wasn't going to happen. And then I would head to school. I spent a lot more time on campus 1L, which I actually think was a lot more tiring, but it worked. And then I just tried to get my readings done on some sort of schedule. So I would read for two classes on Fridays and two classes on Saturdays and Sundays and sort of pace myself that way. But I always tried to make sure that I was getting enough sleep, kind of building in my routines around that. But there was no like real typical day other than sort of filling in the gaps in between classes, which I think can be really helpful. I found that sometimes there's like a 1 hour gap in between a class and in between two classes and you don't know what to do with that time. So that I found a little bit hard to deal with because it takes me a while to get into that focus mode. And I'm sure other people feel the same way. But sometimes you use that time to catch up with a friend or to do something that sort of like takes your mind off the stress of law school. And that's okay too. So I really think that there is a lot of time in a day. And if you manage it well, you can actually get a lot done. That's not just for law school, but also for yourself and your mental health. And both of those things are so important. Like, it's not just about getting good grades. I know that everybody kind of like drills that into you, but honestly, what good is an A if you're not at an A level in terms of yourself and your mental health? Like, I think that is so important and something that kind of gets thrown out, you know, your first semester of 1L when everybody's trying to figure out, okay, am I going to get a job this summer or whatever? But it's important to keep in mind that you're a person first.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times when you take the time to make sure that you're an A yourself, then it helps you get the A, right? Because you have that balance in your own life. I know that I had a lot of friends who would say, you know, first semester, I was studying all the time. Second semester, I realized like, I'm going to do some of the things that I like running, or, I mean, that's great. You should be working out anyways. But yeah, I think it's really important to have that balance, which is, it sounds like you had that throughout the year. And it sounds like it's something that you've had even when you were studying for the LSAT and before. It's just having good habits. It's always going to take you far. The other thing I want to ask you is if you can share a little bit about the process of applying for a 1L summer job.
So I did not apply to many 1L summer jobs because I really wanted to go back to the firm that I had been at for my SEO summer. So I got really lucky and I applied to that firm and I went back for my 1L summer. So I don't really have a ton of insight on that. I know that a lot of people went to the networking receptions put on by the various firms that come to the school, or they host events at restaurants near Columbia and you go and you meet people, and that can be a really great way to network and meet folks. But I would also say cold email people over, you know, or message them over LinkedIn. And I think if you have a good ask and you are respectful of their time and you actually have a reason why you want to connect with a specific person, that can also be a good way to kind of expand your professional network. Just thinking outside the box, you don't always have to do everything. I mean, you actually shouldn't do everything everybody else is doing, because then you're going to end up exactly the same. You're not going to really distinguish yourself.
Yeah. And what kind of work did you do at the law firm that you were at? What area of law?
It was kind of spread across practice groups. Okay. So you would just get assignments from different groups, especially as an SEO, you don't have as much control over the work as you might as a 1L or 2L summer. But I got exposure to a wide range of groups, and that was really helpful in helping me understand what I liked and what I didn't like, and confirming whether some of the interests that I had before coming to law school were things that I was actually interested in. And turns out I do like litigation, and I will be going into litigation after law school. So that was a nice thing to get out of the way before coming, but it's just a really good experience overall.
During your time as a 1L summer, was it similar in terms of trying different things, or what did it look like for that at that time?
It was very similar. And I think actually, now that you mentioned that, sometimes the SEO program seems a little daunting because you are getting thrown in with 1L and mostly 2L summers who have had 2 years of law school under their belts. And so oftentimes people say, well, what do you know as somebody coming in with no experience? I kind of feel like you don't have to worry that much. I don't feel like I knew that much more as a 1L summer than I did before coming into law school. I don't think there's a huge difference between like what you learn in 1L and what you should know before coming into law school. I just don't think you're learning all that much that's useful in a big law firm setting. But I also think that, and I learned this through my time at the DC think tank, that even if you don't know everything about a specific topic, but you have good reasoning skills, you're a good listener, you ask good questions, you're a good writer, you're creative and you're thinking, you can figure out a lot of things, especially if they're like adjacently related to what your strengths are. So for example, for me, going from counterinsurgency to nuclear security seems like a huge jump. But also, I had cultivated the skill set that I needed to be good at reading, writing, analyzing, et cetera, and then kind of asking questions of my superiors and all of that. So I think if you show yourself to be willing to learn something, I wouldn't worry too much about not being able to do the work, because they understand that you're not an attorney yet. You don't actually know what you're doing. Even as a first-year associate, you're coming in and you're not seasoned as a lawyer yet. And so you have time, and I think they understand that. You're not going to be interfacing with clients, is what I'm saying.
I think I agree with all of that. And I think people don't think of it that way necessarily. Like, you can graduate law school, be an associate, and you're still learning a lot on the job. There's not a lot of the things you learn in law school tend to be more theoretical. It also depends on the courses and things like that. But I think a lot of it is, it's designed to be more theoretical than anything, I think.
Is that similar to the experience you had post-graduation?
Yeah, so much of it is. I really liked classes with adjunct professors, so I tried to prioritize that while I was in law school. But even then, like, once you finish law school, that's when I feel like you start really, really learning the skills a lot of times. I think another thing I'd love to hear from you. Okay, so you are on the Columbia Law Review, and that's something that a lot of people work really hard towards and don't always get, even with the hard work. So I'm curious if you can share a little bit about your path to getting onto the Columbia Law Review and what your experience has been like.
So the way that you apply to the Columbia Law Review is you do a process called Write On, and it happens at the end of your final period of your 1L year, so in the spring. I like to think of it as an endurance test, because you've just taken a bunch of finals. You're so tired at that point, and they hand you this like 200-page packet with instructions, and you're like, oh no, I have to read all of this. But I really wanted to try. I had no expectations. I think I go into a lot of things without expectations and just kind of give it my best. And I will say that I think working at a law firm, and I worked with a paralegal who was just exceptional, and he's also finishing law school now. But working with him really taught me a level of detail that helped me so much in completing that write-on application. And I think for anybody thinking about applying, spend the time. Even if you think it's overkill, every little detail matters. And I think that's something that being on the Law Review kind of confirms, that you have to pay such close attention to the seemingly small things, because it creates this pristine larger picture, right? Like, you want to make sure that the details are right so that everything else kind of comes together. I've absolutely loved being on the Law Review. It's been such a great time. I learned so much. I don't know how much your listeners know about what Law Review work entails, but you're basically, as a 2L staffer, working on a lot of scholarship pieces and making sure that the citations used in them are correct and sort of that the footnotes substantiate the text above the line and all of that. And through that process, you actually learn so much because you're reading pieces about very different subject areas. And so you're also picking up really interesting things. And sometimes I find things that I hadn't thought of before, and I'll like open a tab and, you know, do a little Google search for later future reference. And it's just fun. If you like learning, if you are interested in academic scholarship or academic work, thinking about going into academia yourself, I'm not, but I know a lot of people on the review who are and really cherish that opportunity to engage with these pieces on a deeper level and to just start building that muscle. But it's been absolutely great. I've loved it so much.
Can you also talk a little bit about like actually being on Law Review? What is it like? Like, how many people are on Law Review? Do you work with professors? Like, who do you go to if you have questions? Like, what does it actually look like?
So they choose, oh, I'm going to get the number wrong. I think it's like 45 people out of the 1L class.
That's what I remember too, yeah.
They might have raised it. I know they raised it by 5 people, but I don't know if it went to 50 or 45.
Okay.
But so you get selected, you kind of come in for an orientation. There's also 3L, both staffers, and then the administrative board is also comprised of 3Ls. And you have, as a 2L, several assignments a week. Usually you get them, they're supposed to be done between like, you know, 10 and 8 p.m. or something like that. So it is an added piece of work to your regular schedule. You write a note as part of it, which is basically, I don't want to call it a research paper, but I think that's like the closest thing I could call it. You're trying to develop scholarship on an area of law that hasn't been considered in this particular way before. So you're trying to find something novel essentially to write about. And that is also a very difficult but rewarding process. So you're doing that. You're starting in about July and you turn the note in mid-January before the second semester starts. So you're kind of juggling that with the assignments from Law Review with your regular course load. So when people say it is like an added job, it very much is. So I think you definitely have to be committed to it and want to do it. And I think the review really looks for people who are excited about doing that kind of work, because it does get hard sometimes. But I also find that the community on the Law Review is incredible. So it's not that bad when you have, you know, your friends sitting next to you doing the same thing.
That's awesome. And I appreciate you sharing that, because I'm sure that a lot of people might have heard about Law Review, but don't necessarily know what it looks like or what you have to do. Okay, so we're going to wrap up pretty soon. And before we wrap up, there's just a few things I want to go through. One is if you could just talk a little bit about the Veteran Rights Clinic and the moot court experience, like briefly, just because I know that also is a big part of, takes a lot of your time as well. And it's a big involvement for you as well.
So the moot court that I'm a part of, right now I'm an editor. I was on the moot court as a participant my 1L year and really enjoyed the time there and made some really great friends. So decided to stay on as an editor. So as part of that process, we work with the 1Ls to hone their oral argument skills. We have an internal competition where the 8 1L teams compete against each other. We get a winner, and then the top 2 teams go on to the national competition in California, which is where we're headed next month, which is very exciting. And it's just been such a rewarding part of my Columbia Law experience, because you not only like do you get that sort of team feeling that you had in high school extracurriculars your 1L fall when a lot of us are searching for community, but also as a 2L, you kind of get plugged into the 1L community, and it's people who also have an interest in the same, my moot court is asylum, refugee and asylum moot court. And so you have a lot of people who care about the same issues. And so that's always really great. And then the veterans rights externship is new at Columbia, actually. It used to be they called it the Veterans Rights Project last semester, and now it's a full externship with a seminar component. I worked in the national security world for quite a bit, did a lot of internships, and I owe so much of my professional development to our servicemen and women, a lot of military officers that I had the privilege of working with. And when I saw that externship come up, I thought this is a great way to give back to a community that has been so great to me. And also my brother is in the Navy. So it's a little bit of a, yeah. So it's been really great.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing all of that, because I'm sure like people hear certain things, but they don't know what it actually looks like. And then I'm curious if you could share a little bit about what you're doing after law school, if you feel comfortable. I know you have a really prestigious position. And I just want you to explain, like, okay, usually a lot of people go into big law and you considered big law, but you're going to a boutique law firm. And if you could share a little bit about that, I'd love to hear.
So this is another example of I did not think I was going to end up here. It just sort of worked out. But I'm going to a boutique law firm in DC. They do a lot of litigation work, a lot of appellate litigation, which is something that I'm very interested in and confirmed that I was very interested in through the moot court. So try out those extracurriculars if you can. Oh, and I will say that at Columbia, sort of off on a tangent, but at Columbia, doing a moot court is required. You're 1L year, but you can choose to either do the foundational program or the specialized moot court program. And I did the specialized in the fall. But that being said, so I'm going to this firm in DC. I really thought I was going to stay in New York after graduation. I was like very set on it. And then I met with this firm. And I think sometimes you just have conversations with people and you realize that it's just a good fit. And that sort of was the experience that I had. And it took me a while to decide, but I think that listening to that gut instinct and seeing just the way that the firm operated and the difference is it's a much smaller firm. They only have a DC office. It's like 300 lawyers versus other law firms, which have multiple offices and thousands of people working there. I tend to like smaller environments. I'm excited to see how that works out. But I think you just have to be open to things. And that's always what I try to do. And it's worked out so far. So I am very excited to be going back to DC this summer. And it's always nice to be close to family too. So can't really complain.
Do you know which practice area, or is that something that you decide after?
They don't really have practice groups, which is really nice. And so it's
cool.
Yeah. So I really like that too. I think I am very much a self-described generalist. I am very, very curious about so many different things. And I have this very deeply held belief that you can learn just about anything, or at least try to. And I really like working with people who have a similar mindset. And that's the impression that I got of the firm. And I thought, well, okay, this seems a little bit more like my style of work. So I'm excited to try it out.
That's awesome. Well, I could talk to you about this for so long. And I think a lot of people hopefully find this conversation really helpful. So I want to say thank you again for sharing your experiences. I feel like I've shared so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that we could do this and that you were able to take the time. I know you have a lot going on, especially today, but in general too. Are there any like final thoughts that you would, like if you had a sister and you had to give her advice before she went into law school, are there any final thoughts that you would share with her or tell her in this last like minute or two?
Nothing is as serious as they make you believe it is. And I don't mean that in a flippant way. I just think that if you go into this with the understanding that you're doing it because you chose to do it, hopefully, and you know what you want to get out of it, and you're trying your best, you're in law school. You're not going to fail. You're okay. And actually, I would hazard the idea that there is no such thing as failure. Things either work out and you're happy about it, or they don't work out and you learn something. The only time you're failing is when things don't work out and you don't learn anything. And that is something that I fundamentally believe. And I think that if you go in with that attitude, I think, Doreen, you have a very similar mindset to this. And I think if you have that attitude, you can actually enjoy law school. Like, I love law school. It has been a blast. I've had the intellectual time of my life. So I think that there is a lot of negativity surrounding the law school process and law school in general and the legal field. And yes, there are things that need fixing and changing. And I don't disagree with that at all. But I think that if you go into it with an open mind, you might find yourself quite surprised.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you for always leaving us with some positivity. I think this profession could use more of it, for sure.
No, thank you so much for having me, Doreen. Always a blast to speak with you.
Same, ditto.